You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We all want to win the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Playoff edition.
It's over! They did it! They did it!
Well, that reaction to the Stanley Cup championship last year feels a little bit bittersweet today. Hello and welcome. My name is Adrian Hernandez. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab. I'm here today with Ezra Parter, Jacob Wendling, Evan Liu, and Jackie K. Excuse me. We're going to talk Colorado Avalanche prior to their unfortunate elimination from the 2023 Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, it was for me, just to kind of sum up my thoughts on everything, it was a hard fought season for a team that faced a lot of adversity in a very short off season after quite a run. So, like I said, it's a little bittersweet today, but we figured we'd bring you guys some Avalanche coverage nonetheless. Because if you're anything like me, you need to do some venting today. So thank the four of you for joining me today. I appreciate you all.
Yeah, thanks for hosting, as always.
Thank you.
Of course. So as usual, folks, if you're listening or watching, please don't forget to subscribe, share, turn on your alerts on YouTube so you know every single time we are streaming live. All of these broadcasts are recorded and available the day after the show on Spotify, iTunes, and Audible. Today we're just going to, you know, recap a little bit of Game 6 and Game 7, since those are the two games that have happened since our last episode. We'll do a series and a season in review sort of segments. We'll cover our live poll considering some unrestricted free agents in the future, and then I'll open it up to some conversation and we'll finish the show as we usually do with some bold hopes. But I guess this time they'll actually be bold predictions, because I don't know if anybody's really hoping anything anymore. Unless it's a spiteful hope. But nonetheless, let's get into our thoughts on Game 6 and Game 7 of the first round series loss to the Seattle Kraken. I'll start with you, Evan. I like to start with you every time. So I feel like every year the Avs get eliminated, you see a play kind of like Lekkonen's offside play that brings back a goal or just heavily influences momentum in a negative way for the Avalanche. Do you attribute that moment to a lack of attention, or do you see that as a little bit of a mental burnout for a team that was stretched kind of thin?
Yeah, I think you could argue it as both, probably. Okay. I mean, when you're down 2-1 and you're looking for a game tying goal in game 7 of a round you're probably favored in, it's probably in the back of your head, if I had to guess. So, you know, it's just unfortunate. It wasn't controversial like it was in 2019 with Landeskog and his skate being on the blue line or not being on the blue line. Like, it was pretty obviously offsides, and, you know, pending the quick review that they did, you know, after seeing it on TV, you're just like, they did that in like 30 seconds.
I actually spotted it live. Like, when it happened, I was legit saying, please don't score. Get it out of
this
re-enter, because I saw it when it happened. Because what happened is you see Taves kind of check up a little bit. And sometimes from across the ice, your perception is that he's already cleared the blue line and that's why he checked up a little bit. So I understand why Lekkonen just jumped in, because I think he thought he was already in and just kind of sitting in that spot that the Avs defenders love to sit in, just beyond the blue line. And so, like, I could see how it happened, and I could see it happen in real time, and they scored, and my wife was like, I put my head in my hands, and my wife was like, why are you upset? They just scored. I was like, they're gonna call it back. I'm literally saying out loud, like, please don't check the entry.
Well,
please don't
check the entry. The fact is too, is that that happened, what, like 20 seconds like before the goal had happened. So that's
good amount of time.
I mean then again too, like, I forget who was carrying it in, but it got caught up in their skate and the Kraken skate too. So it kind of slowed it up a little bit before entering the zone. So that, I think also Lekkonen was like, okay, it's going to be a clean rush in.
Exactly.
And, you know, so that also, I think, kind of hampered it. So, props to the Kraken defense, and that's probably not the first time we're going to say that, you know, in this episode.
Yeah, not today. Ezra, I want to send this one your way. I felt like the big guys were pretty clearly heavily gassed in the later stages of Game 7. For obvious reasons, they're playing a lot. But when a team's best players play that much and they seem to be so tired, does it hurt more than it helps if you're not getting results, obviously?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it helps. I think it's those guys have to deliver, and they really did. They ran out of gas at the end, but they also, like, they did score a game tying goal. It just got called back. They couldn't get a bounce to save their lives all night. It was a dominant performance from them for 40 minutes, 50 minutes maybe. And then, yeah, they were tired at the end, but they still, it looked like a power play out there even before they pulled the goalie for most of the third period. So, I mean, they definitely looked gassed, but it wasn't stopping them from still generating offense. It just wouldn't go in. It was so frustrating.
Yeah, I go back to some of the saves too that Grubauer made, and me and Jacob jokingly had some conversation on Twitter about this of how myself, I can only speak for myself, but I am eating a lot of crow right now on social media for my opinions on Philip Grubauer. According to the world, but you know, I will say it seems like the Avs get goalied, as Evan puts it in frequent episodes, at the worst times, and this was probably one of those instances. What do you think, Jacob?
Yeah, you know, this is I would call it hubris. You know, all of Colorado, every single person in this state down the stretch was saying, no, you know, I don't want the team that's collapsing and hates their head coach and has been in free fall since January because they have a good goalie. Give me Philip Grubauer. Yeah. And, you know,
those were my exact words, pretty much.
We got what we wanted. And so it's hard to come up with any analysis, honestly, of other than Grubauer than just, like, you know, tip your cap to him. He stole this series. And also, you know, maybe next time we should all shut up and not be as brash and boastful about that.
Yeah, I think that's the lesson that I'll learn the hard way this time around.
Hey, I said it too. I wanted Grubauer too. I'm right in the mud with everybody else.
Well, I will say that, and I'll maybe save a little bit of this for our next segment, but I will say Seattle did a really good job of playing to his strengths, which any good team does for their goalie. So I don't think that's like something that really takes away from Grubauer's performance. I will say though that, like, the Kraken. We didn't give the Kraken's attention to detail in terms of their checking as much credit as I think we should have heading into the series. And I still think in reflecting that they're not quite getting as much credit for that checking presence as they maybe should. A lot of good support out there for the Kraken. Jackie, I felt like towards the end of the game, there was a moment that some fans are pointing to as a little bit of controversy. Where Makar kind of made a move, skated it between two players and then towards another two, got tripped up, hit the ice, and fans wanted a tripping call. Did you want a tripping call there, or what's your opinion or take on that play?
Well, they didn't call the Avs for a single penalty, so I don't know. At that point, they would have, I mean, Seattle's power play didn't do that great either, so they probably would have killed any penalty that was called on them. But it was like the Avs got their one power play goal, which was the one that, you know, everyone was saying, oh, they're going to get one. They're owed one. Well, they got the one. So I don't know how likely it would have been that they would have scored another power play. So I don't know. That's not something I'm really hindsighting on. I feel like if the officials swallow the whistles, I don't know that really hurt the Avs in this game.
No, I don't.
So
yeah.
For me, that's not something that I really even thought about during or after the game.
Yeah, my take on it was, like, I think he was trying to make a play, and anytime you skate the puck into that many defenders, like, and in fairness, it seemed like he kind of had possession but sort of didn't. It was kind of in his skates. So I think, and in that moment, refs aren't going to make that call probably. Because then it'll be the next biggest controversial call, and it's better just to make no call than to guess, I guess, in that moment. So I agree. I wasn't as big of a thing for me as it seemed to be after the game, especially from, like, the altitude crew, and Riker in particular was very vocal in the moment that Makar was tripped or not tripped. Evan, what was your kind of takeaway from how Bednar seemed to handle Game 7 and how Bednar handled this series overall from your point of view?
I mean, you, in all honesty, you can't really pin much on him with the amount of suffering and like man games lost, not just in the series, but the entire season. I mean, what he was able to achieve with this team was incredible. And, you know, that's something that should be praised, something that should be accounted for. He maybe should be in the Jack Adams conversation, but, you know, he probably won't be. But then again, another Boston coaches who maybe had a worse night than us. But I definitely admire his passion and, you know, his kind of maturity, especially after that Game 7 loss. You know, proud of the guys, and that, you know, Mikko said it himself, it's the weirdest season he's ever had in hockey. Yeah. Like
Kale said, he doesn't think he'll ever experience a season like this. I hope he's right.
I know, me too. Not knock on wood for that, but right. Yeah, I mean, that's just how it goes. So, you know, you can't really pin much on Bednar, you know, no matter if you want to or not.
Yeah, if you would have told me 2 weeks ago that the Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Colorado Avalanche would have been eliminated already, I would have laughed at you. But that's the beauty of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the reality of consequence when it comes to not having the full unit on in your lineup. So I think for the Avs, I described it as them being a shadow of the championship team they were last year, and I think that's an accurate depiction of what we were working with. And based on that, for me, you know, I'm not in agreement with some of the fans who see this as kind of a blown opportunity. I just feel like the Avs did the best with what they had and within the constraints of the season. Ezra, what do you think of that?
Well, I think to an extent that's true. I think they really didn't play well for the first half of this series.
That's true.
You have to look at that as a missed opportunity because this Kraken team was beatable. They played really well. I don't want to take anything away from them. They played really well. I'm interested to see what happens next. But this was a winnable series. Mm-hmm. They just came out and played like they did in Game 6 and 7. Game 6, 2, but mostly Game 7 in Game 1 and 2. You know, it's not really a lost season or anything. It's not a missed opportunity in that way. Like, with everything going on, this was going to be a really tough repeat.
Yeah,
And repeats in general are really tough. So, you know, it just compounds on itself. But it does. The fact that they went out on such a high note where they actually did play really well makes me feel better. But it also reminds me that they could have just played this well the whole series. You know,
so. Bingo. Uh-oh, we lost it.
Well,
we love the technical difficulties.
I
have
something I can piggyback off there while we wait for our host to be back.
Yeah. I'll substitute host. Go.
That's true. I think where the missed opportunity comes from is that just another year with this core, and I don't think it's going to last as forever as people say, oh, this core is locked up long term. Like, it's not. Mikko has two more years left.
Mm-hmm.
Taze has one more year left. And then if you think about it, Makar has four, which, you know, four is a fair amount of time, but I wouldn't exactly call that locked up long term either. So this core might have a finite window. And so I can see the frustration where some people think that the McKinnon contract was like their last really big opportunity, which I disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think this was the year ever at like any point really to be the last hurrah, but it's just like the clock always does tick and you're not guaranteed chances forever. So even though to me, it looked clearly like they didn't really have it this year, but it's like you can't count on just having like 10 more chances either. Like every year is precious, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's what was so impactful about what Cogliano likely had to say ahead of the Game 6 in Tampa last postseason was this doesn't happen as often as it feels like. Some of you guys are young and you've been in the playoffs a lot, but getting this close is something that doesn't happen as that frequently. So I think that there's a lot of truth to that, Jackie. Like anytime you're in the playoffs and you don't make a good run, it's kind of a blown opportunity. I will say though, that as we've alluded to already, you know, the injuries played a huge factor in this season, especially in the postseason. And you mentioned too, like, who knows how long the window is, especially considering we don't really know how Gabriel Landeskog is going to heal. We don't know how the Valeri Nichushkin situation is going to resolve. So some of the pieces that you considered your core that was locked up really aren't all that locked up in terms of their availability. So it does kind of feel a little bit like a lost opportunity, but also kind of just like feels like it just, like you said, wasn't our year from the get. And that can be oftentimes the case. But Jacob, getting back to Landeskog, do you feel like against the Kraken, someone like him in terms of his play style, like an elite net front presence that wins corner puck battles, would have been especially effective inside a series matchup with the Kraken?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that, you know, physicality was kind of the defining trait of the series. And if I had to point to one thing that the Kraken did better than the Avs is they were more physical. You know, and up until game six, they were winning more battles in the corner. They were winning more net front battles. And I think that this was the type of series that they really, really missed Nichushkin and Landeskog, because mm-hmm. the Seattle did a good job of clogging up the neutral zone and trying to, you know, limit the Avs skill players as much as they reasonably could. And that this is the type of series where you really need those, you know, hard-nosed sandpaper players to get in front of the net and score some greasy goals. Okay. And I think that was really the defining feature of the series, was not having those two guys.
Yeah, I was explaining it to my family earlier today that, like, Landeskog isn't just a guy who won't get pushed around in front of the net. He's the kind of guy who clears shooting lanes. He frees up other players to make the play. He also just doesn't get pushed around and let other people inhabit that space defensively, which I think was huge for the Avalanche in this postseason. Jackie, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, he's a good player, and he can score too, which is the mm-hmm. other him and Nichushkin are that physical presence that they needed. But yeah, they're also somebody that they really could have leaned on to score. And it is sad that they were quote unquote healthy, I guess, or healthy for them to start the series and they dropped game one. I think that's, you know, they kind of lost it there from the beginning, but yeah. When they even still had Nichushkin and Cogliano, and, you know, you could argue, like, was Helm and Mantz never really that healthy, but they still had them too. So I kind of feel like they definitely were depleted to begin with, and they were even more depleted by game seven, but, like, they had enough horses to start this series. So I think that's kind of getting overlooked a little bit in saying that, you know, they were missing some of that presence, which they certainly were. So it's a lot of little things that go into it.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess my thing is, it's just like, it's Gabriel Landeskog, you know, like that's what he's known for, especially the physicality side of things. Even more so like the in between the whistle stuff. I think not that it really affects the game too much, but I do think it sends a message to your teammates. Whether or not people agree with that being effective or not is a whole nother can of worms. But I think it does, like when he beat the brakes off of, who was it for the Blues last year?
Oh, Shen.
Yeah, when he beat the brakes off of Braden.
I think it was Braden.
Braden Shen.
One of the Shens.
Obviously, it's not customary for guys to fight in the playoffs. We didn't see a single fight this series, but that sent a clear message to the rest of his team and the opposition that, like, hey, you're gonna do this one way, and it's gonna be the legit way. We're not gonna do this other stuff. And I think some of that kind of got, I don't know. I feel like that wasn't as prioritized, and rightfully so, because they were just trying to score first basically the entire series. So mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, what to really take away from that in terms of physicality, like Jacob mentioned. But Evan, how do you think the Kraken will fare going forward in the playoffs?
That's a good question, because I've just kind of put them as an afterthought at this point, because I'm just like, grr about it. but
naturally.
You know, I think for the majority of the rest of the league, maybe not Avs fans, is that they're still like the sweethearts, like the you know, they're still the ones that can come in and kind of do anything. Yeah. They're definitely going to give Dallas their best shot, and Dallas is definitely going to give them their best shot. So You know, I could see that series going either way. And yeah, I think that's all I have to say about that.
Ezra, what about you? What do you think?
Well, you know, the Kraken are my number two team. This is really tough for, because you know, I want to be mad at them, but it's like, how can you be mad at a baby, you know? So
the baby just punched me in the face and laughed after.
The baby just punched his older brother.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't be doing that, but also you know? Yeah. This is a tricky spot for me because I want to be more mad than I am. Okay. I'm obviously mad about the Avalanche not going farther, but I'm not mad at the Kraken, if that makes sense. So for me, I'd love to see how they stack up with Dallas. I think if they can manage to beat the Avalanche and then the Stars, that's a lot of wind in your sails, you know. And I'm not too big on the Oilers. I was wrong that I thought the Kings would beat them. I was wrong about that. I was wrong about a lot of things in the first round. But
you and the rest of the world.
Yeah, for real. but I'd be curious to see what the Kraken can do. I don't think that it's very rare that a team that is based around depth and not around stars wins a cup, but the Blues did it a couple years back, unless we count Ryan O'Reilly as a star, I guess. But and you know, this Kraken team is built like that team where they get contributions from everywhere. The defense is solid and the goalie is kind of bad but good for stretches. So you know, we'll see how it turns out. I think if they can beat Dallas, they can keep going, but it's hard. I'd pick Dallas in that series for sure.
Okay, fair enough. Jackie, what about you? What do you think?
Well, Dallas is still our division rival, so you can't wish any good for them, right?
I love it.
Even if Seattle is annoying at this point, it's like, yeah, go do the thing then, because it's true. There really isn't that much animosity. They're not a rival. And in a way, doesn't it make you feel better if at least you're beat by somebody that accomplishes something?
I never know how I really feel about that. Like, that's always the question. Like, do you want the team that beats you to go on to win it all? Is that some affirmation of your ability? I've always wondered. That's a good point.
I think it matters how much of a rival they are. Okay. And Seattle's not a rival.
Yeah.
So it's more like, okay, we'll go do the thing. Like, it would be hilarious if they're the first team to win the division that they don't belong to. That hasn't happened yet.
Oh, that's a good point.
That is a really good point. Yeah,
it's hilarious.
So that would be kind of funny. And so, yeah, there's like no part of me that really wishes Dallas does well. So
you're rooting for the Kraken. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a lifer's point of view. You know, you've been a fan for a while. So now you see the big picture and not just what you just got hit in the face with. So that's pretty cool. Jacob, what about you? What do you think?
No, I mean, there's still 1990s baggage from the Dallas Stars, man. You know, they knocked the ass out of the Conference Finals too many times. I would never root for that team.
Yeah.
I hate Darian Hatcher too much.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'll root for everybody on Seattle except for Jordan Eberle. I think that's where I'm at. Is that I can get along for the ride because they are fun. You know, they're the Cinderella now, but you know, he broke Cogliano's neck. I don't have anything good to say about.
We never really touched on that. My thoughts on it are similar to Bednar's, which is that you're taught at a very young age that if you see numbers, you don't check the guy. And he definitely saw numbers for a long, long, long time. He cruised into him. And I don't think that there's really any arguing. There's really nothing he can tell me. I've seen every single angle, and there's nothing you can really say about that other than
it's a bad hit.
It's a bad hit that resulted in a really, really dangerous injury.
I was going to say, I'll be an example here. If you're like this and then you end up like that, that's terrible.
Go ahead, Jackie.
Go ahead. I was going to say the biggest problem with it for me is that it's not like it was a missed call necessarily. It's that the NHL thinks a hit like that is a 2-minute penalty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, scary. There hasn't even been an explanation of, well, what would it have needed to be a major or a suspension? Right. And I don't know. I guess if it's late, maybe that's the only thing they care about.
Well, I think the problem that he is that he came back into the game, because this is how the Department of Player Safety and extreme quotation marks thinks, is that because he came back, therefore they don't have to suspend. I guarantee you, if Cogliano had missed that game and then they announced the next morning that he has a broken neck, Eberle is definitely suspended for game seven, because that's just
because they never took the hit seriously to begin with. Like, it wasn't like the Makar thing. They didn't even call it a major in review, because they were doing a lot of hits this year. I just think he's a third liner. Like, he does have a lot of respect around the league, but it's not that big of a deal. I think if it had been like Miko, that gets more attention. And then if he can't continue on, I think that definitely raises some red flags. But I just think they felt like it was appropriately punished and everybody was moving on anyway.
The night before, I don't remember the game, I don't remember the players, but there was a very similar hit. And I was in our broader SB Nation chat talking like, how is that not considered boarding? And the whole broadcast crew was talking about it like, oh yeah, that one looks like a clean hit, I hope he's okay, blah, blah, blah. It's the exact same hit as the Cogliano hit, the same. And the broadcast crews for the Cogliano hit the night of that hit didn't talk about it. Like, just, it wasn't even a thing. It was like, he got hurt. And then the next day, everybody was like, well, he should have been suspended for that one. And it's like, the only difference is now you know he's injured.
Exactly.
And the broadcast crews are treating it that way. The NHL is treating it that way. And I think that broadcast crews have to fix the way they talk about this so that the public will fix the way they think about it and force stops to make some changes, because it's all connected. I was really upset.
Well,
hit the night before, and then to see the same hit happen where somebody breaks their neck, I mean, come on.
It's like appalling, because if you think about the workings inside of the medical staff too, it's like they don't have the technology and the access or the time to assess that sort of injury properly, and so they're basically just going off of what Cogliano is telling them, which is a ultra competitive hockey player playing in likely one of the last postseasons of his career. He's probably not going to say, yeah, I can't go. He's probably going to say, I can go. And the C5 vertebrae is no joke. Like, you miss anything involving the spine is not fun and nothing you should mess around with. But, you know, now you got the Avalanche catching heat from people saying, how in the world do you let this guy go back in and play? Well, it's because they didn't know he had a fractured vertebrae in his neck. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't going to communicate that to anybody, because he doesn't know either. He just knows he got hit illegally into the boards and he wants to go right back out there. So it's really just a poorly set up situation by the league. I even mentioned, like, and this, I hope this doesn't get taken as whiny, because I think this about all of the plays that have happened that have been really wishy-washy suspensions. Like, when does the NHLPA have the ability to sue NHL player safety? Because there's a lack of consistency, and here's a direct example of, like, you put in quotations as player safety. Well, what is safe about a guy who broke his vertebrae when the same play happened two nights before that and nothing happened as a result of it? So I got fired up, man, on Twitter. I had to turn all of it off, because I was just so frustrated with just the obvious imbalance in reaction.
For me, that's the key, though, is I think the players have to care. Like, the fans can care all they want, or the media, and they complain about it. They hate the inconsistency. I hate seeing hits like that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the whole, oh, it's the playoffs, and you expect to see, like, borderline assault. It's just, it's terrible. That was
blatant.
But the players have to be the ones that care, and I don't think they do. I don't think they want to be policed. 9 times out of 10, a guy leaves and goes to the room, he comes back. It doesn't seem to be a problem. Or 9 times out of 10, it's a really ugly hit and he pops up and everyone goes on with their life. Like, I don't think the players want to be scrutinized that closely, mm-hmm. because it's not just, as we've seen, it's not just our guys getting hit. It's how are our guys getting scrutinized and on. And I'm all for consistency, and I don't like head contact at all. I don't care if it's incidental or not. I think that start with that and make it a penalty and see what kind of change we can make. But until the players really stand on the soapbox and get their new PA head to really take a stand, like, they're not even talking about it.
Right.
Like, they just care about escrow. Yeah. They don't even care about these inconsistencies. So it's like, why are we making this big issue of it if they're not going to be the ones that care about it.
They're not allowed to. They get a hefty fine if they speak out against the refs. So,
but I mean, internally, like, I'm not saying,
like in
complain
in,
after the game, but I'm saying the PA isn't.
Yeah, go to your PA. That's kind of my point. Maybe putting it as like, when do they sue them is the wrong way to put it. But I guess it's like, when does that get to the table for the Players Association, where it's like, hey, we have a governing body inside of the NHL that's doing wildly inconsistent rulings and honestly making players vulnerable to future ramifications. Because like in the instance of Eberle, there might be some guys who feel like there's still some things on the table that need to be settled, you know. And in the long scheme of things, if you punish correctly and consistently, the fuel to retribution and redemption and, you know, actually hurting somebody out of passion and revenge, it gets dampened. It doesn't actually happen. So it's like the way that this entity is supposed to work and its functioning, it doesn't actually fulfill that function currently. So I think there's a lot to be looked at in terms of that. And I was just like you guys, I really felt that it was not a good look for the entire league just based on how that situation was handled. But you know, moving on, a lot of fans were just in general bittersweet, had a bittersweet reaction to this season ending. A lot of them said kind of like, well, at least it's over, because holy moly, this was just a train wreck and an up and down sort of thing. Do you guys share that sentiment? I'll start with you, Evan.
Yeah. I mean, go look at the like 10 plus tweets that I sent last night on Mile High Hockey after the loss ended. I mean, I was trying to be as rational as I could. And I mean, when you look at it, like over 500 games, man, lost 500 man game.
It's one of those
hard. One of those ones, combined between the regular season and the postseason, and you know, nobody saw Nichushkin having to step away from the team, and
yeah,
you know, like it is what it is, honestly, at this point. And you know, like I've said, and like most every, and like a lot of other people have said, like, yeah, like I'm, yeah, it still hurts to lose in the playoffs. It still hurts. I woke up this morning and I was like,
yeah,
you know, you get that draining feeling, right? But you know, it will help the Avs prepare then for next season, of course, and you know, maybe try and set some things straight off the ice, maybe get some more clarification whenever they have their final press conference of the year, maybe in the next few days, and you know, just get rested and get sorted then for the off season with whatever moves come along, and resting up for October.
Yeah, I liken the days following a playoff loss to the days following a breakup, where you see all the pictures and the hair tie on the bedside table, and it just reminds you of what you had and what you don't have anymore. It's definitely times like these that make last year's cup even, you know, a little bit more sweeter. Yeah. You mentioned a little bit about kind of some of the topics heading into the off season, and I'll use that as a segue into our live poll of the week. And if you don't already, please head on over to Twitter and follow us there. We are, we can be followed at @MHH_lab, and the whole Mile High Hockey site is @MileHighHockey. This week's live poll, I wanted to focus on some of the unrestricted free agents, excuse me, that the Avalanche will have to deal with this offseason. And I gave three options, but there, I think, are like five or six, considering veterans. Maybe even seven, actually. But I started with JT Compher, Evan Rodriguez, Lars Eller. And the question is, which unrestricted free agent do the Avs prioritize this offseason? Ezra, I'll start with you. What's your answer to the poll and why?
Well, I kind of see all those guys as probably gone. Okay. Evan Rodriguez seems the most retainable to me. I just think, with the season Compher had, he probably priced himself out. He's going to get paid like a 2C somewhere else. And the Avalanche need to focus on finding the answer at 2C, because it proved in the playoffs not to be him. Somebody who can elevate that line regardless of the wingers on it is the thing that I think they need to focus on. Even if, honestly, it could be a winger, it doesn't have to be a center, but somebody who can be like the anchor of the second line, or a third line. I don't know. I guess talking in circles here. But
I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean.
My point is, like, yeah,
you basically need to fill two holes now because you don't see Comfort coming back as a 3C.
Right. Yeah. I don't see him coming back as a 3C. I see Newhook as a middle six center. I see a hole at middle six center that they need to fill. And I don't think that Comfort or Rodriguez are the guy that, you know, change things going forward. I don't know. I don't think that most of the UFAs are coming back.
I agree. Yeah. When I look at the ages and I look at just the situation, it feels like a lot of them are going to be on their way out. You mentioned that Evan Rodriguez is probably the most likely retain. Jackie, is that your opinion too? And what was your answer to the poll and why?
Well, I was thinking of the word priority. I think he used that word. Yeah. Because I think Eller is going to be the easiest to retain. I just think they've already set that precedent where if they're spending a second round pick on a guy, they probably want him to stick around. And like, what options is Eller really going to have? You know,
yeah.
Like, he just doesn't score whatsoever. Like, he's going to have to get priced in the category of depth guy that you don't expect a single point from. So that's not going to cost that much. So I think, I don't know. I just feel like there's kind of an understanding when you spend that much to trade for a guy.
Probably going to bring him back.
And yeah, and he's probably not going to cost that much. So I feel like he's kind of the easiest. But, you know, Rodriguez, I could see as somebody that isn't going to cost as much as Comfer. Like, he didn't beat his career highs or anything like that. So he was looking for that, like, 4x4, and he didn't get it. You know, I don't even know if the Avs have to pay that to bring him back. So it might be that or even a little bit less. So I think that's more likely. I mean, I think ideally they'd want to move on from all of them, but how are they even going to find anybody better and cheaper? And that's the problem.
Yeah.
So I think if they're saying goodbye to Comfer, I think they will definitely try to bring back Rodriguez.
Yeah, and I like what you had to say about Eller because I felt like, as Ezra mentioned too, his being promoted to the second line center in this playoff series says a lot about where JT Comfer was really at in terms of that. And I do think that Lars Eller offers some value in that 3C role that we talked about kind of being vacant in the event that JT leaves. Obviously, maybe not as much of a scoring touch, but still that forechecking presence that you kind of want and that pesky kind of guy that you want getting the puck up the ice. I will say, though, that Rodriguez, to me, I love the guy. I just felt like we saw some of the things in his game that that just don't really fit the Colorado Avalanche here in the playoffs, which is that he seems to lose the puck quite a bit just in those small puck battles. Jacob, what was your answer to the poll, and what do you think of my thoughts on Rodriguez?
I generally agree with the thoughts on Rodriguez. I went with Eller. You know, Rodriguez, he really comes down to price. You know, if he wants to come back at the same $2 million a year that, you know, he had this year, then yeah, heck yeah, come on down.
Come on down.
Yeah. But, you know, if he wants, yeah, if, you know, if he wants, he's earned a larger deal than that. And I think that, like, one of the issues that the Avs have going forward is term, is they have, you know, all of their core stars are signed for a really long time, and they need to generate some flexibility around those core pieces. And so I think that's what would make Eller attractive, is that, you know, at most he gets 3 years, I would think. And I'd be even surprised if, you know, if he got that. And so I think that those are the type of depth pieces that, you know, the cheap depth pieces that they need to start assembling, because, you know, priority number one now is to find a legit second line center, or like Ezra said, you know, a key guy on the second line that can carry it, you know, pretty much regardless of who he's paired with. And those guys don't come cheap. And, you know, Comfer's not that guy. If Rodriguez isn't that guy. That guy is probably playing, you know, somewhere else this year. And so if you re-sign Eller, you can kind of fix 3C and then keep, you know, free up yourself enough money to try to figure out the second line issue.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because if you think about it, with all these veterans leaving on unrestricted free agent status, you should see some money free up. At least a little bit. Hopefully, if we got JT Comfer, Evan Rodriguez, Lars Eller, Darren Helm, Andrew Cogliano, Matt Nieto, Jack, and Eric Johnson, all on expiring UFA contracts. So
it's like
just
$12 million.
Yeah, that's just on volume. That's still at least a good chunk of money.
And if they stick Landeskog on long-term IR, it's roughly about $20 million in cap room that they'll have going into next year.
Right, which is a little more ideal than the situation was in, I feel like, in the free agent window and then the trade deadline window last year. So hopefully they'll have the ability to weaponize that money in a way that they can build, because they've already kind of hinted towards that. Bednar, even in the right after the game, was like, hopefully we have the same core. Hopefully we can get the right guys around them, which I think was kind of a tell, was him saying this team is probably going to look a lot different next year. Evan, what does that different look like to you if the Avs want to be a threat? Like, what needs to change for the Avalanche? And by threat, I mean back to Stanley Cup contention.
Yeah. Whew, that's a loaded question, because I feel like you could point at a few things. I mean, I think that the depth is kind of the big part there. And, you know, looking at that list of UFAs, I think maybe one, max two are going to stay.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't think, like, hell, I think Helm, Cogliano, and both Johnsons are probably retiring. I mean, you saw Eric Johnson's comments last night, and, you know, his eyes are red, emotional. You know, I think that kind of, I think that that picture kind of speaks for itself, which is sad to say. Rodriguez, I agree. Like, he started off fine, but he kind of just teetered off from there. Confer's outpriced himself. I think it would be one of Eller or Nieto that would come back, and I think that that would kind of be it. So then otherwise, then it would be, you know, finding somebody, you know, in that, on that second line who can elevate it, and, you know, maybe like a third line replacement. If they somehow find a way to bring somebody up from the Eagles and promote them full time, maybe like a Maltsev who's done really well recently as of late. I was at the Eagles game on Thursday, scored the game winning goal, like I think three minutes left. So good on him. I think he's had a really good playoffs too. I think Jackie would know the answer more so to that one, but
I'll get it. We're not ending this podcast without me talking about the development.
Great. Like, great. Great. Then I'll save my comments for you then, Jackie, because I don't know if they could find a way to promote one of Myers or Maltsev, you know, up to the Avs full time, maybe that will do something, but that depends a lot on the farm system.
Yeah, I think Myers will probably get his day. I do think it's a tough go for that kid who just looked like had an instinctful reaction to a puck in the air and just punched it right into the net over his own goalie. And you could see him immediately look to the sky like, damn it, that's going to be one of those ones for the rest of my life that I dream about and have nightmares and a cold sweat to. But you mentioned the Johnson & Johnson retiring, as well as Darren Helm and Andrew Cogliano. I think Cogs is probably a safe bet right now. Ezra, what do you think of those guys? Do you think you agree with Evan that most of them will probably retire?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw with Helm that his health is just not – he can't
keep
playing, I don't think. And Cogliano, I mean, that guy, he's not going to give it up easily. He's going to try to get back from
– What a warrior.
Also – dude, you broke your neck. Maybe call it a day. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
And worry about your health off ice first, please.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And EJ, I mean, man, love the guy. I don't want to trash the guy. It's not fair. But he can't skate anymore. Yeah. He can't do it. He needs to retire. It's time. Jack Johnson, honestly, I could see him going another year. He's played better this year than last year. I think he's got... He's got another year or two in the tank, maybe. I would like to see the team move on from Helm, Cogliano, and Eric Johnson, regardless. Probably Jack Johnson too, but and pull the same thing as last year if they want him back. I want to circle back to Eller real quick, because I see like Eller, if he is a replacement for Helm, Cogliano, not an addition to those guys, great. But we can't have a 35-year-old fourth line. Yeah. You know, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. That's my thoughts on that.
That makes sense to me. I think like that might have been what backfired on the Avs this year, was that they doubled down on some of those pieces, the veteran pieces that did probably technically get them over the hump last year.
Sure. Oh yeah.
But like,
guys, I don't want to diminish their.
Yeah, but I think you're right in saying that like it was 1 year too late. for a lot of those guys, and it was a fair, like a smart bet, you know, to bet on the group, especially when that Cogliano fourth line with Helm was really cooking in the playoffs and in the postseason. Like, that was one of the best fourth lines the Avalanche have ever had in terms of defensive efficiency. So I felt like that's definitely something to mention. Jackie, one of the things that I'm kind of concerned about, we talked a little bit about the UFAs and some of the cash that might get freed up from these guys retiring and leaving. But there are a couple RFAs that are going to need some tending to, technically a few, but two that I think are really important, which are Bowen Byram and Alex Newhook. Tell me, how do you foresee those negotiations going, and what kind of numbers are we looking at in your estimation?
Well, with Byram, I'd tell everybody to prepare for that contract to potentially be the one that takes the longest. I'm talking like September.
Okay.
And I mean, it would be fantastic if he signed quickly. I think that number would give them a lot of cost certainty, but it just doesn't work like that for top end RFAs.
Yeah.
You see those guys going into September. I just hope to God he doesn't hold out. Like Nico held out. You know, you look at like Jason Robertson missed part of camp. Like, it just happens and it sucks. And I hate it, but I'm just telling people, be prepared for it, because that's not going to be an easy contract to sign. And it's going to be a big one for the team. So, I've been looking it up, and I am going to write a piece about it because I think it is important to talk about just what the options are. I think even if they do a bridge deal on him, we're still looking at $4 to $5 million. His comparables are in that range. And I know people say, well, he hasn't played a lot. Well, when his comparables signed their contracts, they didn't exactly have the longest resumes either. You know, I'm talking about like McAvoy, who burned the first year of his deal, you know. And then Byram has a lot of things that those guys don't. He has 10 goals in half a season. He has a huge role in the Stanley Cup Finals, you know, on and on and on. So there's a lot of talking points for his agent when it comes to that deal. So that's my thoughts on him. Like long-term, it'd probably be like 7-8-ish. And I think the Avs would be better off signing that. I just don't know if they even can right now. Mm-hmm. As far as Newhook, I think he's like $2 to $3 million. I guess the speed on that depends if the Avs think he's trade bait or not. I kind of don't think so, but if they want an upgrade, like even to replace the guys that we're going to lose, much less an upgrade, much less a real second liner, are you going to be able to do that without using him? Like, they only have about 3 trade chips.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about here? But, if they do sign, like I said, about $2 to $3 million, probably on like a 2-year deal, which I think is fair. And again, he's an RFA. Sometimes those take a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
The others, like a lot of their, not prospects, like minor leaguers, have arbitration rights, which in a way is good because it speeds up the process.
Gotcha.
I think it's ridiculous somebody that's played like 10 games in the NHL has arbitration rights just because of their age.
Yeah.
And guys like Byram and Newhook don't, even though they've been full-time NHLers, but just because they signed ELCs when they were 19 or 20, I think it's ridiculous. But
what do you think of the Dennis Malgin situation? Cause it's a little bit different.
That one reminds me a lot of Obie Cabell from last year. Like he had arbitration rights, and that was one of the reasons why the Avs didn't qualify. I think that was a mistake. I think they needed what he could provide for $1 million, and I think they finally got that with Malgin. So are they going to learn from their mistake, or are they going to look at it the same way and say, we can't risk this guy taking us to arbitration? So maybe if they can get him signed before that happens, because they're going to need to sign somebody. So, you know, for him, you hope you can get him around $1 million. Like, the Avs just can't pay for more than that. So I guess we'll just see what he wants, if he really wants to come back or not.
Yeah, and if like Jackie says, Jacob, if Byram comes back long term and at that $7 million to or $6 to $7 million area, what do you think that means to the balance of the rest of the lineup? Like, are we going to sacrifice some depth because we got quite a bit of money tied up at that point with not so many players? What are your thoughts?
I mean, there's two, as far as roster construction goes, there, you know, there's two big questions in the way, and it's Landeskog and Nichushkin. You know, is Landeskog going to play at all next year? If not, stick him on long-term IR. And now all of a sudden you free up a significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. You know, with Nichushkin, do you expect him to play next year? If so, then, you know, maybe you can splurge on a second line center. If not, then maybe you do have to use that money to start, you know, sign a bunch of Evan Rodriguez types at $2 million, $3 million for 1 year and try to piece together, you know, cobble together a middle six. You know, one of the big wish list on every Avs, you know, Avs fan bucket list is Sidney Crosby, right? Like that's there's the Nathan MacKinnon connection. Mm-hmm. They have kind of alluded to it in the past, saying, "Hey, wouldn't it be neat to play together?" And like right now, it does kind of feel like the time to pull the trigger. If you are ever going to do that, you know, Pittsburgh is kind of fading. Maybe they want to blow it up. The Avs need a little extra juice, and so, you know, if they did that, they would. It would be tough to, you know, patch up the rest of the roster. They would really have to, you know, nail a bunch of Dennis Morgan types on minimum contracts. And so yeah. I think it's hard to try to chart a path forward for the Avs until we have any idea of what, you know, Landeskog and Nichushkin situations are, because that's going to depend on what type of players, you know, that they ultimately go out and get.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I got to commend you for your work on the Nichushkin story that you did for the Mile High Hockey website, because you did a wonderfully professional job of doing so. So thank you for filling me in as a fellow fan and doing it with some, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for. Some class. Grace. Some grace. Thank you.
Yeah.
I do want to
comment on Crosby's, because I mean, that would be. I mean, I think it kind of became a joke in like the last year, but it could be. You never know.
That's what dreams are made of, baby.
I think Nathan MacKinnon has more chance of being a Penguin than Crosby has of being an Avalanche.
But that's the other thing too, is that like it could go the other way. That's a hot take
right there.
Yeah. I mean, like, is Pittsburgh really going to trade Sidney Crosby? Realistically, we have like this dream, if it's ever going to be fulfilled, it's at the end of Crosby's contract, which I think is two more years.
This is exactly. When some old man in Edmonton says, "Well, they traded Gretzky."
So true.
I will say that would be like the story of the season, at least until they won or lost it all, right?
It would be
MacKinnon and Crosby. They'd have to be on the same line. It would be really cool, but
hockey reality is distorted now because Toronto won a series. So what is reality?
Somebody what's that like quantum physics place that everybody has the Mandela effect theory? We've officially gone into another timeline because the Toronto Maple Leafs have won a series, the Bruins have lost in the first round. And I don't know.
LOL.
There's a lot going on. Now's a good enough time, though, I think, to open it up to everybody. And I'll just put this out there to start. What do you think of just the playoff madness so far? Is this how you like the playoffs to go, or would you rather see like the tank teams make it through?
I mean, it's crazy.
I like eliminations. Like, everyone cheers for every single series to go to game seven, and I'm the opposite. I'm just like, some teams need to be put out of their misery. Yeah. Like, we don't need to see seven games of every single series, or every team doesn't need that many chances. And I know saying this is like peak irony, but
there's Florida.
Yeah.
But moving on, we don't need every series in the second round going that deep. Like, just get on with it. Like, the better teams are going to rise to the top, and it does make the sport seem very random. Like, teams losing at home all the time, series going back and forth. And it makes you feel like there isn't a dominant team, which is good. Like, I do like parity, but it also just makes a lot of it feel meaningless too, where it's just like, spin the wheel and figure out who's going to win the cup. So I don't know.
That's imagine being a Bruin fan and thinking of how meaningless it all feels. I think we got a taste of that when we won our own President's Trophy and then got bounced by the Golden Knights. But that has to be sour grapes over there.
I say, think we had a bad night? Go talk to somebody in Boston. Yeah.
Oh, I have all my friends out. None of my friends out there slept last night. They were all just like, yeah.
Well, at least we got the Nuggets to root for now. So They moved Lord Stanley out so that Larry O'Brien could move into that presidential suite at Ball Arena.
I'll admit, I don't follow basketball all that much, but maybe I just might have to. But I do want to go back and actually touch on something because that Jackie brought up, because we didn't touch on it at all. The Avs losing 3 of 4 at home was also a huge killer.
Ouch.
In the series. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you only come out and perform for, you know, a half game in game two in front of your fans, that's not great. And then going into game seven, you know, trying to win in a last resort game, you know.
But I mean, you're not wrong. They played from behind in every single one of them too.
Exactly.
So it's like, and I wonder how often has that ever happened where a team has scored
one at a time.
But did that series go to seven games?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh my goodness. Toronto. It was Toronto.
Hopefully they didn't just hand us the cursed
God. I was going to say, did we just join Toronto? Pass off the baton.
Abe Kubel drops the cup, and now it's us for 70 more years.
We haven't talked about that enough. We never had a chance to repeat.
Yeah, Abe Kubel broke the cup.
Damn it, Nicholas.
We definitely should have brought him back, Jackie. We had to punish him. He just broke the cup and rolled out. That's funny. I think it's funny too. I'm getting a ton of as it should be, like, it's called sports hate, and I don't mind it. Like, I get a lot of Seattle fans that come at me after the Avalanche lose, and to be honest with you, I just love it because I think it just shows, you know, how entrenched they are into their own fandom at the current point. I will say though that you kind of new kid on the block, so until you've been around a few times, maybe keep the receipts to yourself, because it's all fun and games until you're in the screenshot.
Yeah, that's true. I will say though that I will give props to Seattle. Like, this win is obviously huge for not only the organization but the city. Like, still trying
the
to
grow too.
It's hockey, the league. Exactly, and especially to our friends over at Davy Jones's locker room, their site now is going crazy.
Which is an excellently named website, by the
exactly,
way.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, I've talked to the managing editor there. He's awesome. He's a great guy. So props to him and, you know, his team. And that's really this is really going to help them. So
yeah,
you know, that's nice on their part. And if I also remember, Ezra, didn't you say if the Avs lose, you start a Kraken blog?
Oh, shit. I did say that. Oh, no, you better reach out to that managing editor.
I got to talk to Clay. You know, I think my like confidence in the team pre-game one of this series was valid and good. And I think we all felt the same way. But then as soon as Nichushkin was off the table, it's like, all right, what do we even have left? So I think all promises made pre-Nichushkin should be invalidated.
Rescinded. Take it back.
All bets don't count.
BNA before Nichushkin's absence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Evan, go ahead.
I was going to say, like no one probably could have seen that one coming. And, no. You know, it's just something that is unfortunate. And, you know, I think we said it last week too, is that we obviously just hope for the best, of course, with all the new details that came out about it. So is what it is at this point. Nothing we or anybody else can really do about it.
Nope.
On it really quick, on the DNVR podcast after the game last night, they were talking about some commenter asked, like, how the Avs would handle no longer have, like, the end of Landeskog and Nichushkin's careers. And AJ was like, Nichushkin will be back, you know. It made me think, like, oh, he knows something that he can't say yet.
Seems like it.
So I don't know. It seems like
it feels like there's two.
We'll see.
It feels like there's two bodies of people who have access to the same information. One that's not sharing all of it, but some of it, most of it, and another that's sharing none of it. Which I don't know. I think the NVR is kind of falling in the none of it side, which I think is respectful because they took a stance early and they've stuck to it, and that's fine. Yeah. I will say with that situation, man, transparency is pretty important though when it comes to these times, because you see how big of a distraction it becomes to the rest of the team when the question coming into game seven and game six, some of them aren't even about the game, you know, and that's never what you want in the postseason, no matter the circumstances. And like Evan alluded to, we wish everyone involved nothing but the best, but from a sports point of view, that's not something you really want to deal with in the postseason. So hopefully that settles. I agree, though. Like, I think Nichushkin will be back. I think the fact that we haven't been told a lot probably has to do with when he comes back. Right. And
hopefully we'll get more with that final press conference that they'll have here.
There will not be one. Oh, there won't be one.
You don't think they're going to have one at all? Or they already announced?
They haven't had one in the 10 years that I've been following it closely. So
really?
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
They run and hide, and I don't know how they were allowed to get away with it. Every other team in sports, like the Colorado Rockies, have an season-ending press conference, even though they're completely irrelevant and nobody wants to hear what they have to say, but they still do it. And
they have an end-of-season interview after paying another team to take their best player ever.
Yeah, well, their end-of-season interview is, "Oh no, we suck again."
but please come back. If even that team has a shred of accountability.
Well, I can't.
Yeah. Right. And then the abs don't.
Yeah. Well, then maybe I lied. Maybe we won't be. Neither won't be one then.
Even if there's some kind of, well, I know there won't be a press conference, but even if there's some kind of like final
comment
report,
there's nothing.
It
won't be about Nichushkin. That's going to be
a Especially since, you know, the Seattle police say there's no criminal investigation there. And so, like, that would be the pressure point for them to say something. If there was some sort of, you know, criminal investigation. So as long as there's no criminal investigation, I don't think we're going to hear a word about him.
I just can't wait for Val's book about this to come out.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there's going to be a Russian story one person translates and puts it on Twitter, and then, like, 50,000 people take whatever that one translation is, whether it's right or
correct or not,
and it's going to be the story for the rest of the summer about what happened with him. And I'm just waiting for that one to happen, because it's going to.
Well, that's a good segue into our final segment of the show.
The bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Predictions, and is officially bold predictions. And so I'll make the first bold prediction based on what we just talked about. The Avs will have an end of season press conference in the history of the franchise. So that's my bold prediction. Maybe it'll come true. I'll just, for the recap of last week, give us one big wrong buzzer. I will say, though, Jackie was right, but it got called back. Son of a gun.
In my heart, it's still a goal.
Me too. So. I agree.
I should have kept my Eric Johnson pick.
Yeah.
I know. I think you get half credit for that, because you're the first one to really throw that out there. And
I agree.
It did finally actually happen.
Yeah, we'll give
you did it a week early.
We'll give you a man-made ding. Ding. There you go. That's what you get for that one. So my bold prediction is that we'll get an actual press conference to end the year this season. Evan, what's your bold prediction this week? Doesn't have to involve the Avs anymore. Well, I mean, it didn't ever.
Yeah,
really.
I was about to ask if it involves the Avs or if it's about this week alone, because I have one for the offseason, but we can save that one for an offseason podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know what? I'll go with this one. Florida takes one of two in Tampa, or not in Tampa, in Toronto.
In Toronto, of the first two.
Yeah, they take one of the first two.
Florida, one of first two. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I will, like, the Sirius satellite, I think it was Scott Laughlin, maybe, was just roasting, absolutely roasting Tkachuk 4 days ago about, you know, how he's got all the in between the whistle stuff, but none of what really counts. And then, whoops, here we are today, and Matthew Tkachuk's kind of like the toast of the town. But that's just, I think it's funny whenever that happens, because I've always liked Tkachuk. I do think, like, he's one of those dudes where you love him if he's on your team and you hate him if he's not. And those are usually my favorite players. So I think if he was an Avalanche, he would probably be my favorite player. Ezra, what's your bold prediction?
I'm going to say the Rangers dominate the Devils tonight. It's not close. And then they don't lose another game this week.
Whew.
Wow.
Ooh.
I'm back in my lone remaining cup contender from my bracket.
The bracket can't be busted this
soon. My bracket's so busted.
I'm toast, yeah.
Same. I had Avs and Bruins in the final, so how's that going for me?
I had Rangers winning over the Avs. So
yeah, I did. I was just going to say, I did have the Devils beating the Rangers, and I did have well, I also had the Kings beating the Oilers, so that one kind of blew up in my face as well. Jackie, what's your bold prediction this week?
Let's see. That Toronto and Edmonton meet in the cup, and then we can all turn it off and ignore the entirety of the Canadian media and their fans and Twitter and just move on with their life.
Mute
it all. Let them attack each other. Let the world explode.
Oh, man.
I will say, though, those things would be so fun to watch.
Oh, man, yeah.
Like, the media part of it will suck. But the games, oh, man, that'd be fun.
We've already transcended into chaos. That would be full chaos. Canada would blow up.
So I hate to be the guy that I always talk crap about, but I'm going to talk about the Leafs right now on the Avs podcast. Do you think, similarly to the Avs, that victory kind of is a monkey off their back? Like, the Avs won the second round, and I think they didn't really I don't feel like there was a similar environment, at least among the fans, even after that round. Do you think that's a monkey off their back, or is it still tough?
I think they are the most similar team this year to the Avs from last year, in both the, like, overcoming a monkey off their back, having a fleshed out depth to their lineup that they didn't have before, and kind of being under the gun with their core and their coach in a way. I didn't really think Bednar was on the hot seat last year, but people did, you know.
Yeah.
Keith actually is, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I think that there's truth to that. If they can avoid an upset from the Panthers, it's one of those, anytime a team makes it past the second round, I'm like, they could really do it. If they can win this round, I guess they could do it.
The fact that one of the Panthers or Toronto is going to be in the Eastern Conference final.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Mind blown. All right, Jacob, give us our final bold prediction of the day.
I say Edmonton takes two games in Vegas this week.
Ooh. Oh, both of them. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I don't like that matchup for Vegas. I know we're not huge Edmonton fans here, but I just don't feel like they can keep up with Edmonton's pace.
I like that pick, though. That's a good pick.
Jackie, can you do me a favor and give me one that'll resolve this week? A bold prediction? Because that one will be a couple weeks away. If Edmonton and...
Carolina was my Stanley Cup pick. I believe I had them facing Vegas.
Okay.
So I think I'm still alive. But I guess I got it back. I guess my team now, which is Carolina, which I've always liked them, so I'm cool with that. Let's say I'm not really sure how many games. Probably played three games, so I'll say all three. They probably will take two out of three, but that's not very bold. So I'll say they'll take three.
Wow! Only one of us can be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess. Oh, yeah, no, that is true. Because, yeah, even if the Rangers don't make it, I still would be wrong.
Carolina will take three. What? I'm confused. I'm
yeah, lost. Three. Win all three games.
Gotcha. Yeah. Win three games. Wow.
They're the team I'm backing now, so I gotta hype them up, right?
I was going to say, I think I'll probably hop on the Kings bandwagon, I think, now at this point. I don't think I can root for anybody out West now at this point.
Yeah.
They're just so injured, though. Like, they don't have – who's going to score their goals at this point?
Aho's
the only guy scoring.
They have depth. They got an overtime winner from
Paul Stastny.
Oh,
Paul Stastny, yeah.
Come on, that's not going to happen.
Paul Stastny.
a heady shot that was, though, huh? That was pretty smart. You could tell he did it on purpose. That was not an accident.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Did I hear it on the broadcast, right, that was his second overtime goal? So, yeah, his other one was with us, game one, 2014.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And getting back to Jacob's prediction of Edmonton winning both games at Vegas, please. Because I still hate the Golden Knights more than I hate the Oilers. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We swept the Oilers. Why would I hate them?
You know, I'd root for Vegas over Dallas or Edmonton. If it's Seattle, Vegas, that'd be a little
weird and cool.
That'd be an interesting Western Conference. I'd have to revisit. But over Edmonton and then Dallas, yeah. I'm rooting for
another
Vegas.
Dallas, if it's another Dallas, Vegas, Western Conference final, I think I'm just going to puke.
Yeah,
I hate the Stars, but I like Pavelski and Suter were the guys when I was young. Watching them at Wisconsin was incredible, so it's hard for me to cheer against them. But I don't like the Stars.
let me just set it straight.
All right, well, that was bold predictions. Those bold predictions every single week. Just trying to put our foot in our mouth as often as we can, pretty much around here. So if you enjoyed that segment, feel free to hit us up on Twitter and on all of our social platforms and give us your bold prediction. Maybe we'll talk about it on the show next week. I will let everybody know that in the future, now that the season is ended, we might be doing bi-weekly episodes, but we will be sure to inform you when we are dropping these. Just come and take a look every Monday at 3:30 still, because that's probably more likely what we're going to end up doing. I'm Adrian Hernandez. I'm here with Jacob, Evan, Ezra, and Jackie. This is the Mile High Hockey Lab, brought to you by SB Nation. Thank you so much for having us and for, you know, tuning in throughout the regular season and playoffs. It really means a lot to us. If you are as big a diehard as we are and you still haven't got your fix, even though you watched an entire regular season and your team be eliminated, head on over to the website. We'll be talking about Colorado Avalanche still and what is to be expected in the future. So signing off from this season, I guess, and moving on to the next one. Thank you for listening, and you folks have a nice
day. Mile High Hockey Lab.
Playoff edition.
It's over! They did it! They did it!